Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
Cutting down to the truth through history and experience, The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.
The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. We have a special guest on the show today, a gentleman that I call my brother. He's a West Point graduate. He was an officer in the Army Rangers, the 75th Regiment, 2nd Battalion. Griff spent some time in Afghanistan, and more importantly, Griff is one of those unique guys that gives back. He has a company, Combat Flip Flops, that employs people in conflict areas to produce products that can enhance their lives and the lives of their families. Matthew Griffin was not someone that just went to Afghanistan to experience a conflict. He's someone that saw a need and met a need. And I really count him as one of my dearest friends. He's a gentleman, he's an officer, and he's a warrior. And he's something we desperately need in our nation today. So welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, Doc. I'm humbled by your interest. Thank you.
No, it's good to talk with you. And in full disclosure, Griff and I have been talking a lot over the past several days. You see, I've spent over 12 years in Afghanistan, and Griff was there several times and has businesses there. And what we are watching right now is nothing short of a man-made disaster that actually didn't have to take place the way it is. Now, both of us were in full agreement, I would say, Griff, that we should have left Afghanistan. But the way that this exit is being executed is malfeasance. And it's also, I don't know if it's malfeasance or intentional, but I'd like to get your take on it, because Griff wrote something, and I encourage you to go to Combat Flip Flops and look at his blog. It's all over the internet, and I'm going to let him describe it. But he wrote probably the single best article, letter, anything that could be written on the current situation in Afghanistan. And he wrote it from the aspect of the Taliban thanking the Americans. And Griff, go ahead and describe the genesis of this and what you spoke about.
Yeah, I've really been struggling with this situation over the past few weeks, and just basically America's head in the sand about the situation in Afghanistan for the past 20 years. And there's nothing that any of us, with all of our experience and all of our skills and all of our time on the ground, that is going to get American people to listen. They still listen to the talking heads behind the pulpits and on the news. And if we do voice ourselves, we just sound like angry veterans. People don't look at us with our experience. So you know, like you said, it was a divine gift. I just woke up this last Saturday morning and I thought to myself, I have to write it creatively from the Taliban perspective. So that way Americans might comprehend their mindset and why we continue to lose behind poor and lazy foreign policy. And I sat down and I banged out a really good rough draft, and then I hit a couple Rangers, and my buddy Scott Chapman says, "Hey man, let's really twist the knife." And so we sat down over 2 hours on Google Drive and just back and forth on edits. And we just launched a piece that has now gone viral and is being censored across the internet.
It's amazing. In fact, you were telling me a story about the mainstream media right before we came on air. Go ahead and relate that story.
So there was an admiral, I can't remember what his name was, but he was on MSNBC. And the admiral, the title of the article says, "You know, the military generals underestimated the Taliban." And it just goes to show the disconnect from the fighters on the ground that actually know what's going on. These are a seasoned, trained enemy fighting on their own home terrain. All of the guys like you and I were passing up these reports that they've got all the guns, they've got all the money, they've got all the support. They cannot be underestimated. And then Eric Prince, you know, the founder of Blackwater, one of the most successful military contractors in history, says, you four-star generals and all of your cronies are part of the problem. You should read this article. And he drops the link, and it's on the homepage of MSNBC in this article from this admiral. And I wouldn't say I'm surprised it went this far, but I am super thankful that tremendous warriors that I respect find the truth in this, and they really want to share it with people so that way more Americans can understand the truth in it.
And that's so critical, because you and I both know our generals knew what was going on, because, and I don't say that, it's not hyperbole, because in my capacity, I reported on it. I am looking at a report from September of 2020, where everything that you wrote in that, we spelled out to the Pentagon and to the intelligence services. I'm going to read a brief respite from it, and I want you to comment on it, because this is part of the reporting, and this is nothing that's national security anymore. But I think it's very important that the American people understand this is what was told the powers that were controlling the war effort in September of 2020. And it says, our reporting indicates that the Taliban leadership is confident that they can win the war, overthrow the current Afghan government, and reestablish their Islamic emirate without having to share power with anyone. They refer to all those currently in government as facilitators of the occupation, deserving to be purged. They continue to tell their base that the U.S. is handing over power to them. The leadership has not prepared anyone for compromise. Now, note that this report was written during the talks with the Taliban. I go on to say, the Taliban have done some kite flying by circular draft proposals about sacking the government, replacing the parliament with their council of priests, and putting their people in charge of the security forces. More seriously, the consequences of leadership discussions is that the Taliban would only accept an interim government formula as a way of taking over the entire country, not as a route to power sharing or democracy. The Taliban leaders expect they will still have to fight to capture Kabul, so they are opposed to any ceasefire before they have done this. And it just talks, it goes on and on to talk about everything that Ambassador Khalilzad proposed. They shook their head and said, okay, and then went to their people, because we had their actual communications, and said, we're not abiding by anything they're saying. And now look, everything they spoke about in this, that we spoke about after getting their communications, has happened. It's just like you said, they were funded, they had a plan, and they executed their plan flawlessly, and they never planned to grant us any conditions, which I think is critical, because, and I'll go on to say some more later, but go ahead and comment on that.
Yeah, it just goes to show that they think that they can slow troll the American public. They believe that our memory is so short, and we will take any information that they are telling us as the truth. If you go to my Facebook page, and this goes back 10, 12 months, I have a bookmark where I look every day, and I look at the Afghan peace process news, and I read everything, and you can see the slow roll. And if you look through our posts, I comment on them. They have the gold, they have the drugs, they have the arms, they have everything they need. Why would they compromise?
Well, and that was in.
Get it? Yeah. Why would they compromise? They wouldn't. There is no need for them to compromise, because they know that we cannot sustain this. They bankrupted the Soviet Union, which caused the fall of the Soviet Union in the 80s. They're willing to do it to us again.
No, they were. And here's the thing. We gave them the risk assessment, both short term and long term. And we told them exactly what you said. They are well funded. They are well supported. What people don't understand, a lot of folks, is that the ISI, the intelligence services in Pakistan, support the Taliban movement, as well as China works with them in Iran. They have nation state support of this, of what they're doing. And we showed proof. We showed that they are being supported by primarily Pakistan. And the interesting thing the State Department said the other day is, Well, we accomplished our goal by making sure no foreign militants came in. And I can tell you from personal reporting that we showed for over 2 years the influx of foreign militants into Afghanistan through Pakistan, and they were given safe haven. We provided video of said foreign militants to the Pentagon, to the Joint Chiefs, to the intelligence services, and they did nothing. Why do you think that is?
It's odd that you asked that question. I'm a 2001 West Point graduate, which means all of my counterparts right now are lieutenant colonels and colonels, and they're on senior staff. And I had a senior staffer who is on the strategy at the Pentagon. And, you know, we were talking and she said, the intelligence reports were coming back so bad that even the intelligence agencies were sticking their head in the sand and not passing up the reports because they were so bad. There are so many people that are out for themselves and they don't want to look bad, you know, in our day and time, or you just can't be a failure, that they just didn't pass up reports.
That's true. It's a giant self-licking ice cream cone where no one wants to win and be successful, but they want to protect their ability to rise within a dysfunctional system.
And if you look over the past multiple administrations, you get fired over a tweet. You can get fired over a side comment if a reporter hears it and picks it up and posts it in a publication. So every officer, every military person can't be critical of the administration and the courses of action because they don't listen to the guys on the ground. And everybody is gun shy now. Our military and our leadership is more afraid of getting fired than they are of doing the right thing. What's happening right now. That's our military at this point.
And Griff, you and I are both students of history. You look back at World War II when Eisenhower fired his own West Point roommate and instilled a 38-year-old general in Europe who had distinguished himself in the Pacific theater. And Eisenhower's words were, "He wins." That's why I put him in. And it used to be that if you weren't successful, you were fired. But now you're promoted if you're not noticed and you don't have any bad PARs or performance evaluations.
Yeah, I think the part that really kills me about it is, you know, the American public was exceptionally critical of general officers up until, I'd have to say, right after Vietnam. And then something happened in American society where it became, you know, unpatriotic to criticize the military. No, you should hold general officers accountable. They're congressionally appointed. If they lose, they should be held accountable. They should be fired. They should get their jobs. But instead, what's happening right now is they get out, they get fat jobs with government contractors, which should be a law, right?
No question.
If anybody supports anything that says dot mil, those general officers should be barred from their retirement should they take a position with those companies. But now what we do is we let them write books. We let them get all over the media. We let them go speak to our financial, political, industrial leaders about teams and winning and discipline. So that way our American population follows their losing lead. They lost. I don't understand 100%. Why we're listening to these guys. I don't understand.
We lost in Vietnam. We lost in Korea. We lost in Afghanistan. We lost in Iraq. And we didn't lose the initial battle. We lost the conflict, and we lost it, and you lay it squarely at the feet of the generals where it belongs. And why, you know, someone asked me the other day, I got an email, why are we leaving all of our equipment? And the easy thing to say is, well, we had to get out of there fast. But I think it's much more nefarious, because if you leave equipment, then you have to replace it and buy new equipment.
Yeah, I'm dumbfounded by the imagery that I'm seeing. You know, in my time in the military, in the Ranger Regiment, if you lost a pistol, say, you know, we didn't have the best holsters back in the day before.
Yeah, I remember.
If you lost a pistol, you would spend weeks in the field. You wouldn't be able to go home and talk to your family because you were looking for a lost $800 Beretta crappy 9mm. Now I look at this stuff. We left behind helicopters, drones, $20,000 machine guns by the arms room, rockets, ammunition, all of this stuff. And The only thing that I can think of is, you know, I spent some time in Iraq during the fall of Mosul in 2017, and we went to Yazidi refugee camps, and I got to talk to people. I got to see women who lived in tents and were growing their food 5 feet outside the front of their tent with their kids because 90% of their village was killed. And they were killed with arms that were left over that we supplied with the Iraqi National Army. You know, we might have abandoned everything, but like we left behind a force that was going to give them all the arms and weapons of war that were going to commit genocide. There is no other word than the word genocide.
I was there. Yeah.
Now, the only thing that I can think of is that they want that to happen again. And, you know, if you understand Afghanistan and the tribal regions, you know, Pakistan, Iran, they love Southern Afghanistan. Southern Afghanistan loves both those countries, and they left them with so many arms where they might actually be able to take over Northern Afghanistan. It's,
well, they're already there. They just took Mazar-e Sharif. And here's the thing. When I was in Mosul in 2015, working with the Pesh on the front lines, their biggest concern was when it would get cloudy or foggy. They only had torches, meaning lights. They had no FLIR. The FLIR was given to the Iraqi army by us, and the Iraqi army would then abandon it to the ISIS. So ISIS had the sniper rifles, the infrared scopes. They had everything that we had and were using it to kill our best allies there. And that was the frustration. I embedded with a family of 1,000 fighters, and I was the only white guy they would let embed with them. And I could tell you story after story what you just said. They leave the equipment, and it's used by our enemies to create more chaos. And you know, I bet we will start seeing a lot of government-funded NGOs start pushing refugees to this country, because that will be the next big moneymaker is, well, we got to get them out. We have to push money here to get people there. And I think they create the instability to bring over, just like they did in Somalia, to bring over more Ilhan Omars to this country. And I'm not talking about our TERPs and things like that. I'm just talking about general populace.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we just did a fundraiser, a GoFundMe, to get our interpreter out. And a guy that, you know, we've worked with for over a decade, a fellow Green Beret classmate of mine from West Point. And I was hammering on the media. These guys need to get out. They need to get out. They need to get out. They need to get out. And luckily, you know, the UK, because he did a 3-month stint with them, granted him a visa to get out. He worked with Green Berets, Rangers, SEALs for over a decade. And our government, State Department process failed so miserably that he's been applying for 9 years and he hasn't been able to get to the United States. And fortunately, we were able to find a loophole and get him to the UK, and he got out on August 1st.
That's I'm so happy. We got our TERP out a year and a half ago, and he's in the States now with his family doing good. And I know how you feel. These guys risked everything to help us.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the Taliban is, they're stating in public is like, hey, the general population is fine. And I think I almost believe them, but you're going to see a purge of the politicians. You're going to see a purge of the military leaders. Command Sergeant Major Roshan, the number one enlisted guy in the Afghan National Army, was captured a day and a half ago. His daughter was killed on the tarmac because he was trying to get her out of country. They are going to kill these guys, drag their naked bodies through the street just as a show of power to show the Afghan population to not stand up against this kind of oppression.
Last week, a young girl, and I've put the picture up on my social site, Shafika, her only crime was to support women's rights inside of parliament. This is a girl in her 20s. She was wearing the burqa on a bus traveling, and Taliban intelligence knew the route, stopped the bus, just pulled her off, and executed her in the dirt. And they will do that, and they did that, and our government knows it. They don't care what our government says. They never abided by the conditions of the, quote, peace process to begin with. And at the same time, you and I both know the brutality is often done by foreign fighters, and to our best estimates, and I have a lot of people there giving me information, they have over 6,000 foreign fighters. And if anyone understands history, the foreign fighters are the ones that usually commit the atrocities, because the Afghans aren't traditionally inclined to brutalize other Afghans, unless it's a totally different tribe like the Hazaras, etc. But the foreign fighters have no compunction, and they are cannot be controlled. And a lot of the Afghans, even the Taliban, are scared of these foreign fighters, the Chechens, the Uzbeks.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was just going to say that because I was there. My first tour was 2003 on the PAC border, 2004 on the PAC border, 2005 doing time-sensitive target missions around country. And the most violent guys, the guys that we would pick up, were not Afghan. We could literally sit on the PAC border and see them in their camps in Pakistan, but we couldn't do anything about it. We knew that they were going to come over and commit human rights atrocities on poor Afghans.
Yeah, they're the guys that executed people in public by decapitation. These are the guys, if anyone understands the conflict prior, that blew up the Bayman statues. It wasn't the Afghan militants. It were the foreign militants, the foreign Al-Qaeda. And the State Department and the military says, we removed the Al-Qaeda from Afghanistan. No, they strengthened Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And now they have basically a forward operating base for the world with nation state support. And you and I both know the terrain there. And they border Iran, China, and Pakistan. And Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, you know, the Stanis, which are really just conduits up into Russia in the crime. And I can't believe I'm saying this. We left it much worse than it was when we got there.
Oh, and infinitely worse. It's horrible. Yeah, it's people don't. A lot of people go, oh, you know, we went to take out the Taliban. It wasn't to take out the Taliban. It was to take out Al-Qaeda. And at the fundamental base of Afghan culture, being a host is core. If you are a welcome guest of an Afghan, they will die to protect you.
That's how I survived for 12 years there.
Yeah, and we asked the Afghans, the Taliban government, to give up Al-Qaeda. And we're asking them, it's just like saying, like, hey, guys, just like pull down all your flags across America. Like, don't love baseball anymore. That's what essentially we were asking the Afghans to do in 2001. And of course, they fought. And we went to go take out Al-Qaeda, but all we did was we gave them more fuel for their propaganda fire. And a lot of people ask me, well, what changed it? What made them so violent? And I say, it was the drones. Imagine, if you will, Keith, right? You've got some friends in the military. They just happen to pop into town. Yeah, they just happen to pop into town and they say, hey, Keith, why don't you come to dinner? And you go, okay, yeah, hey, Erica and I will come. You know, we'll go have dinner together. And then, hey, you know, I had a drink. Can you give me a ride back in your car? And on the way back home, a drone rockets you, your wife, and all of your friends out of the car, and your boys have to come collect your bodies off the side of the road. And in that wreckage, they find rocket parts that say United States of America. What would your boys do to avenge your death?
Oh, no question. And here's the thing. I was in country when a wedding party was droned. 40-some people. And that's a failure of intelligence. That's when the intelligence services, and I don't want to go down this rabbit trail, but they, for the most part, rely on liaison between like the ISI and the CIA. And some folks in the ISI might have fed them bad information to further make them look bad. Shocker of all shockers. That's why we have to have ground truth and not just rely on liaison reporting, because it resulted in exactly what you said. There were some very tragic drone strikes based off of bad reporting, bad intelligence, and the intelligence officials responsible for, I'm not sure anyone ever was punished or took credit for it.
No, nobody was. We just continue to drop million-dollar hellfires off drones in foreign countries that America wasn't at war with. And all we did was we bred a fighting force. And the other fundamental part of it is per Islamic law, when you martyr yourself in the fight against the infidel, Muhammad is their prophet. You sit above Muhammad at the right hand of God. So now let's combine these two. I'm avenging the death of my family member, and in the process of doing so, I am blessed at the right hand of God for eternity. And we created those fighters.
It's, and we tried. There was a group of guys that tried to explain this to him, and in another show, maybe we can talk about the actual peace process that would have worked. But at the end of the day, the powers that be didn't listen to the guys on the ground. They didn't listen to the Afghans that were truly there to make the place better. Instead, they looked at it as a military-industrial complex boondoggle where they were building big box fobs, and the military would go out in full battle dress and meet with the Shura. And I was up in Nuristan and meeting with elders, just wearing my man jams, and one of them told me something that I'll never forget. He said, the Russians did it much better than your military. And I said, how? He said, the Russian officers would come up dressed like you are. They didn't drive in armored vehicles. We welcomed them as guests, and not one of them, even if they were our enemy, if we invited them, ever had a problem. The Americans want us to trust them, yet they don't understand our culture. And that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a thing called bats and eyes, and I don't know what the thing is, but it's like some sort of biometric, you know, thing that came out in like 2010, 2012, where, you know, we force our young platoon's lieutenants to go into town and then scan everybody's retinas and get their fingerprints. And I was talking to this, I'm out at this point. I was talking to this young lieutenant, and he's like, hey, what was your biggest thing? He's like, yeah, we got 50 bats and eyes today. You know, and then we got this huge bats and eyes where we got this whole population. Well, how'd you do it? He's like, well, there's a funeral party. So let me get this straight, young lieutenant. You took your combat infantrymen into a funeral party and you stopped a funeral to retinal scan and fingerprint everybody there. Are you serious? This is what your leaders are telling you to do and is going to be in the best interest of winning the war in Afghanistan?
Yeah,
I don't understand where culturally we think this is the right thing to do.
Well, the Taliban just announced that they have biometric data. I wonder where they got that biometric data from, because I don't think the Taliban had bats and eyes. Yeah, there's a whole lot more to unravel on this, and I really want to get you back. I want to talk about, you know, what you guys are doing. So plan on coming back within the next couple weeks and giving us an update. Griff, tell me, how can folks reach out to you? Because I think you're one of the leading authorities on Afghanistan.
So right now, everything, if you guys want to reach out to us, just go to combatflipflops.com. If you want to reach out to me directly, I'm on Instagram, combatflipflops.griff, G-R-I-F-F. I've been shadow banned because of this article that I posted. Yeah. I've been shadow banned because of this article that I posted, that it's fictional truth, but it hits so hard that I'm now being suppressed on social media. But yeah, you can find me on Combat Flip Flops or Instagram, combatflipflops.griff.
Griff and I have worked around the world together doing some humanitarian work. And I can't tell you there's a greater human on the planet. The guy has a heart for people. He has a heart for our nation, and it's guys like Griff that's going to make this nation great again. And check out Griff's. I could spend a whole show just telling you what Griff does for the world, but check his information out. Read his article and give him the title of that article again, Griff.
It's called Written in Taliban.
Written in Taliban. We'll have it posted, Everett. Let's make sure that's posted on our website. If you have any questions or comments about Afghanistan, hit us up. You can go to our website, click on, I believe it's KFR at thescalpeledge.com, and leave us your email. We'll discuss it on air. Evidently, this podcast has blown up. We're over 115,000 downloads when I looked the other day. So pass it around to your friends. Let's get the information out. Support and pray for our warfighters that are on the ground. I understand they just had to contact the European element and request more ammunition. It's not quite as peaceful as our government says it is. So pay attention, talk to your congressmen, hold them accountable, and let's pray that somehow, some way, that the Taliban don't do what so many of us are afraid of in that country. Anything to part on, Griff?
I would only echo your comments of hold your representatives accountable. Don't let them skirt out of this one, please.
Make them, because if we can hold our representatives accountable and force changes in our military intelligence and our central intelligence, maybe, just maybe, we can start course correcting this nation again. So go out and have a great day. We'll be back with you in the morning. And most importantly, let's keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line. Freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times. Standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey. Your secret's safe with the NSA. In God we trust or the CIA. Standing on the edge of a revolution.
Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.